Your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Why would I have a magician appear on a radio program, let alone on a program that focuses on work? No, the magician I have on the show now is not going to do any auditory tricks, but you will learn a lot about what it's really like to be a magician, and not just any magician, nor one of those who uses multi-million dollar contraptions to create an illusion. This world champion magician does it all with a mere deck of cards. For example, picture him showing you a deck of cards. Standard red design on the backs, the usual ace through king and four suits on the front. He shuffles them, and suddenly, four aces just pop out. And then, the cards go from being red-backed to blue-backed. And then instantly, the entire deck, not just the aces, becomes blue. He turns the deck face up, and the faces, those ace through kings, have been replaced by the cards spelling out the words, "Penn and Teller, did I fool you?" He waves his hands, and then the four aces instantly pop up into his hand, and the deck reverts to normal faces. After hovering his hand over the deck for just a moment, the cards reappear in a box, the box of cards, the standard box of cards. He waves his hand, and now there's only one card in his hand. He puts his hands together for a moment, and the card completely disappears. He holds his empty hands open to the audience. There's nothing there. It is my privilege to introduce to you the current reigning world champion, Phism Close-Up Magician, whose first appearance on Penn & Teller's Fool Us has received 48 million page views on YouTube alone. Shin Lim, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure indeed. Approximately how many hours has it taken you to prepare that five-minute routine?
Well, that one's called 52 Shades of Red. That one was created about 5 to 6 years ago. I mean, I guess you could say I'm always perfecting it, so it's taken 5 years to, you know, quote-unquote perfect it. But to create it wasn't too long. It took me about 8 hours to create the whole act.
Wow.
But it was really bad. the first draft was not showable at all. I was actually given a time limit. I only had a day to create another act when I was going on tour, because this was kind of a last-minute thing I was told before I went to China, that I needed to create another 7 to 8 minutes. And I had only about a couple hours before my flight had to go, so I quickly, last-minute, just created something that was visual, that the Chinese audience would understand, didn't have much talking in it. And that was it, and that was the first version. But it's changed so much from what it was back then to now.
So what's interesting is many of the great novels or screenplays that have been written, also you talk to them, you ask them, how long did it take you to create? They talk about it flowed out of them. It just happened really quickly. And it sounds like that may have occurred because there's a magical coherence to that act. And by the way, I encourage any listeners, just Google Shin Lim, Epic Return, Penn and Teller, and you'll find it in a second. How long did it take you to first develop, for example, how to vanish a card, how to take a card in your hand and then make it appear like it's gone?
There's so many different techniques to doing that, and many basic principles, advanced principles. And so when I was first starting out, I learned actually a lot of the beginner's tricks on YouTube. That's where most people actually learn. Mm-hmm. And most of the kids these days, they learn it that way.
Right.
There's so many different variations. There's the tenkai palm, there's the back palm, and so, you know, those are the basic ones, and then you get further, as you delve further into deeper into the more advanced part of magic, then you get something called BA. I'm not going to go too.
No, let's not. Let's not. Right.
But magicians who are listening, you'll understand what I'm talking about.
Right.
A lot of different ways.
So, but Net, you were going to be a pianist. You know, you were classical trained and the whole deal. And then at age 15, you had this epiphany that you wanted to be really a performer, and it was too restrictive to be a pianist. And so you ended up spending a number of years going from somebody who knew nothing about magic, who saw just one trick on YouTube, to where you are now world, you know, best in the world, or one of the best in the world, whatever. What makes you justify all that time on something that is ostensibly as silly as card tricks?
Well, I actually didn't believe myself when I was first doing it. I never took it seriously, ever. I just really enjoyed it. I spent so much time when I was younger, you know, hours and hours practicing in the bathroom, because my mom would get mad at me every time I wasn't studying or I wasn't practicing the piano, and so I had to do it in the bathroom secretly. but I just genuinely enjoyed it. I had so much love for the art of magic. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily cards. The only reason why I did cards was because it was cheap.
Right.
I was on a budget. I was a high school kid. I had no money at all. So the deck of cards is the cheapest thing I could use. And I'm a pretty stingy person, so that's why I still use cards till this day. I think it started realizing that I could actually make a living when a lot of my peers were telling me, hey, you're really good at this. Mm-hmm. Like you're actually really good, not just like, oh yeah, you can, like, you know, they weren't saying it because I was their friend or anything. Like, people started like seeing something and making me believe in myself, and it was when I started winning magic competitions, because I could kind of, you know, see myself against other magicians. Yeah. And when I won the adult competition and the teen competition, I was like, okay, maybe I can actually do this. Right. And
what makes you distinctive is a number of things that all come together. Obviously, vanishes and reveals have been done forever, but you're the intellectual coherence and aesthetic beauty of your act with the right music, because you're a musician, and everything is beautifully and dramatically tied together, and you're an edgy-looking guy. You're not the guy in the black tuxedo with the, you know, the primped-up hair. You're an edgy guy, and so I think all of that put together in coherence creates the magical ballet. Do you buy that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Completely. I mean, that was why I did card magic, I guess, because back in the day, but only like 20 years or 15 years ago, you know, to be a magician, you had to have dancers, you had to have
right.
big illusions, you had to be super bombastic, you had to have a lot of flair, your hair had to be golden. I don't know, and like. Animal magic and you have to make a tiger.
Right.
So I actually didn't like any of that.
Right. Right.
I was just I'm pretty much just doing what I like, and I guess people have to somehow like that. Well.
And it's a simplistic, it's not a bombast. The bombast is like the 1950s about bombast. You're about understated elegance and, you know, simplicity and beauty and perfection in the way in which you do them. But enough of that fawning crap. I'm going to make an argument for why what appears to be silly, that is a 5-minute entertainment routine of card tricks, actually has enormous value. I teach in the medical school at UCSF, and I see people devote their lives to trying to do research to cure disease, and many of them go through their lives and they really haven't cured much. Or I see many people working in the nonprofit sector. They devote their lives, and the amount of difference they make sometimes is significant and sometimes not. But any single human being who watches Shin Lim's act, all the millions of people, every single one of those 48 million people who simply watched it on YouTube, they are happier. What an amazing accomplishment to make 48 million people happier. And to do that throughout your career, you will literally make billions of people happier, and not just the rich. Because no matter how poor you are, you can go to the library, and even if you can't afford a computer, you can watch Shin Lim and doing a variety of things, not just that one routine, and be happier. Is that not a justification for a life of ostensibly silly card tricks?
100%. I completely agree. I mean, you can say the same thing about filmmakers. They devote their entire lives, or screenplays, or anything. They write, you know, they devote their entire lives on that one story, that one film that they want to put out, that they want to tell. And when they do it successfully, you know, to all the viewers, even myself when I was younger, you know, movies was an amazing way to, mm-hmm. to just escape from reality mm-hmm. for just 2 hours. I love film. Yep. Film is one of my greatest passion, and
yep.
and watching movies when I was younger, I was bullied, and you know, I didn't mm. really have the greatest, you know, greatest time as a kid. Mm. Movies was the one way for me to just go into this fantasy world, just for even 20 minutes, or if it was just a cartoon episode or something. It was just so life changing. It really helped me, and I see magic as the same way. I always kind of view magic a lot like a film. And even different ways to construct it and how you put it together and stuff like that. And so, I completely agree. And I think that's why I keep doing what I'm doing. I love performing. I love creating. And I love giving it out back to the world.
Shin Lim, I am shocked to hear you say that you were bullied as a kid. You are handsome. You are a nice guy. You're not obnoxious like I am. You know, why were you bullied as a kid?
I wasn't handsome at all. You should see photos when I was a kid. I had a bowl cut and everything.
Which your haircut was the whole problem, huh?
Yeah. So a new haircut just changed it completely.
You got to see this haircut. He's got this perfect, edgy haircut. Don't change haircutters, Shim. You've got the world's best haircut.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to keep it that way. Hopefully. Absolutely.
Yeah, unlike me, right. Anyway, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I am talking with the world champion FISM close-up magician, Shin Lim, who is totally awesome and a nice guy in addition. He has not developed that ridiculous big head. I don't mean of hair. I mean big head that often superstars get. Is there a statement or an article or a book or a person that rings in your mind as you're either practicing or performing?
For inspiration, I'm always listening to Hans Zimmer.
Tell me why. I don't know who that is.
Hans Zimmer is a composer. He composes a lot of pieces for films, especially movies. Have you seen the movie Inception?
I haven't.
Or The Dark Knight.
Anyway, go ahead.
He does a lot of film scores, and it's just wonderful and so inspiring. And I like to listen to music a lot of the times to get kind of that inspiration.
Yeah. You know, music really is. I mean, I tend to be a sad person. I get really pumped up on the air. I love being on the radio. But I'm kind of a sad person by nature, and I find music to be the ultimate antidepressant. It's like Prozac without side effects. So I can certainly understand the value of music. Again, as another example, I'm looking at Joanne Marr, who is my board operator. She runs a show. It's called Folk Music and Beyond on the weekends. And again, I think we share this love of music. Music and magic and movies, all that stuff which tends to be marginalized as somehow not important, ultimately may do more for humankind than many other pursuits. So maybe there's a thread in that.
It runs my entire act. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, yeah, it's the sleight of hand, it's the blah, 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 you know, it's the magic. And really, yes, but the other half of the entire act is the music.
Yep.
You don't even know it, you know. Everything is synchronized, everything is timed, but you want to do it subtly. You don't want to be too obvious about it.
Yeah.
And it really changes the whole feeling and atmosphere of anything, the movie, the act. Magic.
And would you, because you're, the music you used in that Penn & Teller, return was so catchy, da-da-da, that's been an earworm in my brain for like weeks. And in fact, when Penn & Teller came up on the stage to say, "You fooled us," he went and mimicked that music.
Yeah, he reenacted it. That was so funny. I couldn't stop laughing.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, being a little more serious for a moment, the real unvarnished truth is that magic is not in right now. It's not the hot entertainment. You know, music festivals are the hot entertainment. You're at the top of the magic world now. Do you still worry about your ability to sustainably make a good living at magic?
I think most magicians do, even the ones that are constantly on TV. For me right now, I currently have different streams of income. Performing is one. I'm actually currently about to do a show in about 35 minutes. So, so I do performing, and then I teach also. I share my magic with magicians. Mm-hmm. Not the lay public. The lay public don't really have. If they did purchase my lessons, they wouldn't understand it, because you have to have a lot of knowledge of magic in order to understand what I'm talking about. Just different streams of income is always good, and it keeps things exciting, and you're always doing something different. You don't really get burnt out, you know, if you're always doing different new things.
But dear listeners, now listen to this. Here is a guy who is the top of the world of magicians. No one can say the best, but he's certainly in the ultimate super duper top tier. And yet the guy still teaches, the guy still sells tricks. So it says something about the fact that while it is amazing for us to aspire to a career as a musician or a magician or an artist or whatever, even at the very top, the guy is teaching lessons. It's not. It's a tough, tough road. Is that? Am I being fair in saying that?
Yeah. No. I wouldn't say it's tough. I've definitely had harder jobs than this. I definitely enjoy it a lot. You know, it's really fun performing every night. And that question does come up a lot, but for me, I always try to just keep my mind into doing different things. I'm always trying to do something new, and kind of going along the same lines of not being overly repetitive. A lot of performers, I think, maybe one of the main reasons is because they just do the same thing over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I think that gets boring. And so when it becomes boring, that's when you lose that spark. And when you lose that spark, that's when you lose it.
Yeah.
That's my main focus, is to just keep trying to do something new, something fresh, and that way it keeps things interesting. And who knows where my career will go? It might change. I might do something else, something different other than close up magic. My goal right now is to kind of divert away from cards, trying to do other things.
Yeah, so you surprise your listeners, your viewers. You know, I want to, in my obsessive concern about balance, I want to take one more push at the negative side. I have a lot, I'm a career counselor, and I have a lot of clients who are in the world of entertainment, and young people who are entering the world of high profile entertainment, even low profile entertainment, have to prepare themselves for everything from hateful social media posts from trolls, to somebody stalking a handsome guy like you, to simply an unhealthy peer culture, to an event producer who stiffs you. Is there anything you want to say to aspiring entertainers about any of that?
Oh, man. Oh, there's so much. It'll take me like 2 hours to go through that whole thing. The higher you go up, you're going to get a lot of haters. And the best thing to do is, it's hard to say to not listen to them, because you kind of have to. Not all of them, but some of them. It's kind of like taking an opinion, you know, not for a grain of salt, but you should just at least listen to it first. And because there's always some truth to some of the hate. When I first started out, I got a lot of hate for my type of magic, a lot of the older magicians. So much on social.
Why? Pieces. Why would they? Why would they? I mean, what could be less controversial than a guy doing magic tricks with cards?
For example, one of the competitions, I actually got a zero for during the judging.
Huh.
One of the judges said, "This is not how magic's supposed to be." That's what he said. He said that it's supposed to be funny. He's supposed to entertain and interact, and supposed to make jokes.
Wow.
And so. At that time, you know, I was really heartbroken. I was like, "Oh my gosh, my magic's not magic," according to one of the judges.
Jesus.
Yeah, and later on, I realized that's the kind of stuff that I shouldn't be listening to.
Right, indeed.
Because it's so harsh to the point where he gave me a zero. The ones that you should listen to are when they say something good, and then they say, "But there's this." And so, so those people are the ones that usually you should kind of listen to. And okay, they want to help me out. They're not just trying to tear me down, or they don't have some crazy opinion that's completely out there.
Okay.
Um, But when you're first starting out, it is pretty hard to listen to all the, you know, the negative comments.
So I'm going to take a shot. I'm not a magician, but I do love, I'm simply a fan. I have no desire to learn how you do the trick or anything like that. But I love going to magic shows. I'm a very serious guy in reality. And watching magic, whether it be a YouTube or live, enables me to escape and have a sense of wonder, because I'm not a kid anymore, and I've lost my sense of wonder. And when I get to see a good magician, and I hate the comedian magicians, because they almost take away the sense of wonder, and they're just another stupid comic. Whereas a real magician with real mastery, that enables me to escape and have wonder. But I'm going, for what it's worth, I like to make my radio show about reality. So I'm going to tell you my honest feedback about everything about what you do, and, you know, and see if you see it as constructive. We have a little back and forth for a minute or two, okay?
Yeah.
It's certainly well intentioned. Okay. So to follow your model on the upside, I love your look. I love the coherence, as I said. I love the coherence of your routine. I love how crisply you make your moves. They are relaxed and then a sudden, relatively quick move, which creates extra suspense. The music that you used in the Penn and Teller thing is beautifully timed. What I think I would, if I were your manager, I would be telling you that you don't want to be stereotyped as a card guy. I do think you need to, as in each, maybe once a year, you've been doing the 52 Shades of Red and the Dream Act for a couple of years now. I would invite you to create a totally different act, not with no elephants, no tigers, no million-dollar engineered things, no tuxedos, you know, no dancers, no silly jokes, none of that crap. Keep your look and feel, but something radically different that nonetheless uses your good hands, but would feel like, oh my God, here is a, provide an expression, transformation of Shin Lim to something that is not only different, but even a notch better. Am I asking too much of you, or am I way off base?
No, no.
What's your reaction?
This is something that I've been trying to, well, I think I have done some of it. I've created three new routines. No one's seen them yet. Mm. I'll be premiering them in America's Got Talent.
Yay! America's Got Talent.
Yeah. One of the acts does have playing cards, but the other two don't, and they're different. They're different, and I wouldn't say, without giving too much away, they're not as magical. It's just different. It's a different style. So it's kind of, I have no idea whether the audience will like it. So. We'll see.
Will it?
But that is my goal. That is my goal. Okay. My goal is to do something. I'm doing. I'm just trying to step away from playing cards, which I know some magicians who are listening in, they're probably like, "What? Why?"
It's smart. It's smart. Hey, you know what I want to do? I want to give my dear listeners a chance to ask you a question or two. See if they are, if they have vanished or they're actually listening. Anyway, it is my privilege to say that my guest on Work with Marty Nemco tonight is the world champion FISM close-up magician, Shin Lim, whom you've got to Google and watch his video. This is radio, so we cannot do in magic, but you got to watch it. But if you have a question or a comment for supreme magician and nice guy, we spoke off the air, and he really is a nice guy. He doesn't have a big head. I welcome your calling. This is the time to call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, for your question or comment for world-class magician Shin Lim, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While we're waiting for the calls to come in, you obviously have watched a number of other magicians. Is there one either magician or one magic trick that you particularly respect or enjoy?
Oh, yeah, so many. One at the top of my head right now, Yu Ho Jin, he's a good friend of mine. Maybe he's listening, I don't know. Probably not. He's probably busy performing right now.
He'll listen to the podcast. It's on npr.org and it's on iTunes, so he can get to listen to it.
Yeah, but he's a really good friend of mine. And when I first watched his act way back, because we both kind of actually competed in the same competitions, but he does stage magic, so his magic is usually on stage. Mine's close up. He does a card manipulation act. Maybe you've seen it. It kind of went viral as well. There's a couple of million.
I have it. Why don't you walk us through the elements of the car act?
He wears full black suit with a diamond on his neck or on his collar, and he has a white scarf, and he kind of just folds the scarf up, and it turns into a playing card, a white playing card.
Okay.
And he does magic with that playing card. It vanishes and reappears, and then all of a sudden it starts changing colors, and then now it becomes a fan of cards, and then that disappears and reappears and vanishes, and then finally it becomes a singular white card again, makes it levitate, and then mid-levitation it turns into the scarf, back to the scarf from when he began the routine, which is so beautiful.
Right. Notice, you, dear listeners, notice his word, the use of the word beautiful. I think that is the next generation of magic. It is not about big routines. It is about beauty. It is an integration of beauty, music, and wonderment. Is that fair?
I completely agree. I think that's kind of the same way, almost kind of the same way film is going. Yeah, because film has always been big, boom, huge Hollywood blockbuster. Everyone wants to see big explosions. But you'll see now that's no longer the case. People want to see something with a good story, something with a good meaning. And
story, that's an interesting point. Yeah. How in the world are you going to weave story? Because while your previous acts were very coherent and they seemed to have a nice kind of a roundedness to them, they start in one place and they kind of come back to the same place at the end, how can you inject story into a magic act without talking?
It's pretty hard to do it in a 5-minute segment, but I think for magic it's really so different, you know, from musicals, from plays, from even a ballet, because it's something that you're hiding, right? It's for musicals, they're not hiding anything. They're just dancing and they're just showing you and singing. But for magic, you're actually hiding some secret. So it's such a unique way to tell a story that it almost becomes abstract for me, at least. And so that's why I like to present my routines, anything that I do, is very abstract. So there's not a clear, concise, okay, this is what he wants me to think. This is how he wants me to feel. That was never my goal. My goal is always to make them feel something on their own through my act, and that way, you know, it's by making it abstract. I think that was the best way to accomplish that.
I want to take a shot at it for the fun of it. Again, this is about part of the conversation. We're trying to, you know, kind of get into the world of magic and, you know, what it's really like to be a magician, not just on stage. Let's say I said I just viscerally pictured a butterfly. And somehow the you immediately make the butterfly appear and fly somehow. And it's small, but it's beautiful. It's one of those morpho butterflies that's this light, beautiful blue and yellow combination. And then it morphs, or no, it starts as a caterpillar. You start with a caterpillar, and each series of tricks ends up going through the life cycle of the caterpillar becoming a butterfly, and then a huge butterfly, and then its life cycle as it eventually dies, and then with some kind of a big finish. That would be a kind of a coherent story. Is that?
That's a good idea. I like that.
Okay, just a thought.
That's a really good one. That got my brain turning. Wow. Never thought of that.
I also thought, because there's something about your look which is so beautifully Asian, and I'm not being fawning. It's just although you're very Americanized, you look very, very Asian. And I think that somehow suffusing your act with a subtle hint of that Asian. I've seen butterflies in Japanese and in Chinese art very often used. I think that incorporating that somehow would again be lend an additional level of coherence to your act and a lovely ethnic flavor without hitting anybody over the head. What do you think?
I completely agree. You and my mother should talk. She was telling me the exact same thing. She wants me to do a routine with butterflies.
I can't believe it. My God. You know, yeah. I love your mother. You know, when I was trying to book Shin, I dealt with, I didn't realize it was his mother. It started, I was his manager, but his manager is his mother, who is very smart, very loving, and certainly one person in this kind of sleazy entertainment industry that you can trust. She's very smart and very caring, amazingly responsive. What's it really like having your mother as your manager?
It's probably the best thing ever, because I trust her. And that's so
Absolutely.
Hard to do in this industry. I mean, for those who are starting out, just as a warning, like, it's a crazy world out there. It's crazier than you think it is. Like, I've met so many bad people. I've never met so many bad people in my life until I started doing the entertainment world. Yeah, and so having your mom as your manager and, you know, someone you trust, it's probably the best thing that I could ask for.
What can you share or want to share about those bad people? You know, I don't want you in trouble,
well,
but, you know.
Getting roofied. that was probably the
wow.
worst one.
Well, for those who don't know, roofie is a drug that puts you that gets you drugged, and you know the people can have their way with you if you're drugged.
Yeah, that was by one of the producers.
Wow.
Let's see. There's that was the worst one, and then there's the normal ones that you kind of expect, I guess. Going to the gig and then spending a month. It was a 1 month tour, and then I didn't get paid at the end of the contract.
A month.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah, so it's a long time. I mean, usually if I'm doing like a week gig and I don't get paid, I wouldn't be as upset, but a month is a very long time.
It's outrageous. I mean, that's unbelievable. Anyway, let's go off the bad and to the good. Is there a call online? Looks like there is. Yes. Okay. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and my wonderful guest, world champion magician Shin Lim. What is your question or comment for him? Hello.
Is that me?
Yes, it is.
I'd like to know what Shin Lim thinks about Ricky J.
Oh, the card thrower.
I don't know.
The magician.
Yeah, he's a guy. I know he's written a book. Ricky J has written some book about magic for everyone. He's well known.
Ricky J is a card master. I'm surprised he doesn't know him.
Amazing.
All right. Well, thanks. This show, I appreciate it. I always like your show. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah. So, do you know who Ricky J is?
Of course. Yeah.
Oh, you did.
Well, there's two, so I was just asking him to.
Oh, okay. Well, so do you want to answer his question? Even though he hung up, what might be interesting for our audience to reveal about your feelings about Ricky J?
Oh no, he is one of the. So I was saying, you know, he's one of my inspirations when I was starting out. Yeah, because he has a full like hour show on YouTube. Actually, you can search it up if you want.
Mm.
It's amazing.
What's different about his card work than yours?
His is, well, he's better, I think. He's much better than I am.
Mm.
Technically, he's much better. I'm sure all the magicians will agree with that. He also is really well-spoken, super articulate, and it shows in his performance. And so, you know, every time I watch him, I want to be him. But I never, you know, I knew I could never speak as well as him. I'm just really bad at speaking, to be honest. So
you're doing great. I swear, you know, you're authentic. You're being very real, and it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure. You know what I want to end with is, you know, as I mentioned, I'm a career counselor, and this is kind of a tradition with every guest who I like. You know, people call into my show with some career issue, and I try on the spot to offer some useful suggestion. Is there a career issue you would like to run by me that's going on in your life right now?
Yeah, it's hard when I'm doing my live shows, or my full shows, because sometimes, like right now, I'm performing at the Opera House, but I'm performing with a couple other performers, so I'm not doing my full 40-minute set.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only doing 20 minutes.
By the way, where he's in Sydney, Australia right now, at the Sydney Opera House is where he is. He's thanks to the largesse of KELW, we're calling him internationally, and that's where we're speaking. So when you talk about the Opera House at Sydney, okay, go ahead.
And so when I'm doing my 40-minute set, I always have to have some talking. I always try to have some comedy and some jokes in it, but not anything too cheesy. It's more classy, I guess. I don't know how you would phrase it, but I always found it a little bit tricky on how to structure it.
Okay.
You know, I always found it weird. I always found it weird going into a talking, something very casual, and all of a sudden going into something dramatic. I mean, the audience seems to love it. You know, they seem to like that kind of contrast.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of like seeing my real character after seeing me perform so seriously, so dramatically, and all of a sudden now they see the real me. And it's kind of, I like it, but for me, I'm still not 100% comfortable.
Okay.
But practice makes perfect, I'm sure.
A couple of thoughts. I think too much practice takes away authenticity. It then seems scripted. Like you were talking about, if you overdo a routine, it's going to seem like you're almost just sending it home, you're just doing it. No. I think that too much practice, just like you and I have not rehearsed, is that correct? You and I are having a conversation like we've had a couple of beers, and I swear to you, it is much better because of that. So what I would encourage you is twofold. number one, to you're not. One of the things that's very difficult to do is to take somebody's verbal skills and really ratchet them up a lot. I think you need to accept that your verbal skills are good enough. You may not be Ricky Jay, but they are good enough. You make perfect sense. You're a reasonable guy. You're not dumb in any way. So accept that as a basic, and then strive for authenticity and coherence. And what I mean by that is the following. If you can structure your act where you start to talk chronologically about your life from early on, from with a real sense of authenticity in your conversational tone, no Blackstone tuxedo fancy, you know, abracadabra crap, or stupid little comedian jokes like I see even, you know, Penn and Teller do, and he's smarter than most. But telling your life story, the anecdotes of your life that have the most emotional content, happiness, sadness, disappointment, joy, your mother, your girlfriend, your fiancé, walking through your life and interspersing your tricks within that so you can retain the contrast you're talking about, but also they create a bond with you. Shin Lim is not just a magician. Shin Lim is a human being. What do you like and not like about that set of advice about your patter?
That's perfect. I never thought of it that way, but that makes it easier. Makes it easier to construct a routine because it's my life.
Exactly.
I never thought of that. Thank you.
Well, I will quit while I'm ahead. I thank you, dear Shin Lim. And Mabel, Mabel Lim, is her last name Lim as well?
Yeah.
Mabel Lim, thank you for having such a wonderful son and for our wonderful email exchanges. And Shin Lim, thanks so much for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemko. I do predict that you will not vanish from the stage, but you will continue to reappear, reincarnated in different forms over a long lifetime. It was my pleasure to have you on the show.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having
me.
Hey,
before I let you go, okay. Awesome. So I want your website to tell what is your, because people can buy their tricks from you. They can see you, what your upcoming schedule is. Where should they go in order to buy stuff from you?
I have some merchandise. If you're not a magician, you could buy the tricks, but you won't really understand them. They're very advanced. I recommend you study some of the beginner stuff, learn some beginner tricks, then you can go on it. But it's shinlimmagic.com. So
Shin Lim, S-H-I-N-L-I-M dot magic dot com. Shin Lim
Magic.
ShinLimMagic.com. Okay. Anyway, thanks so much for giving me your time right before your performance. Knock them dead in your performance. I know you're going right on stage right now.
I am going in about 5 minutes.
Exactly. Okay, Shin. Knock them dead.
All right. Thanks, Marty.
Take care.
Bye.
So you can see I love magic. I love entertainment. I love music. I love all that stuff. So forgive my irrational exuberance. But in any case, I will try to be serious or maybe semi-serious with you. We now turn to you. This is the time when you can call in for what I call the workover. Whatever your work problem is, whether you're 16 or 76, unemployed or well-employed and still unhappy, self-employed, work for nonprofit, government, for-profit, I can usually help. So, and the price is certainly right, zero, zippo, not. I call them workovers with pummeling rarely involved. If you want some free work help, this is my pro bono work. This is what I do here on KALW for you. So this is the time to call when the lines are open. The phone number here for a workover is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. We're reaching the end of the year, and what is certainly timely for me to talk about career-wise is how to make the most of year-end. Now, some people make the enormous mistake who are job seekers who think that, oh, well, you know, this is the worst time of the year. Everybody's involved with Christmas, and, you know, they're not going to want to talk to me now, and then every job seekers should stop looking. Wrong. The last 2 weeks of the year are the best 2 weeks of the year for job seekers. Why? There's a number of reasons. Because most job seekers do stop looking now. At the same time, ironically, as many employers are more available to take your call, to carefully review your applications, and many organizations have to have their 2018 budget finalized by the end of the year. That perfect storm of factors makes this the best time to especially do your networking reach outs, not only by cold contacting potential employers or using LinkedIn to contact them, but also at parties. Now, I understand, obviously, when everybody's going ho, 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 you're not going to hit them up with your hard pitch necessarily. But certainly, and I'm not a big party goer, but if I were a job seeker or otherwise trying to enhance my career, my butt would be at those parties, and I would I would not prematurely make the ask, but I would certainly try to have interesting conversations, one-on-one conversations with people, and at the right moment, slowly reveal my desire to find new work, better work, whatever. And don't ask for a job that's too strong, but at the right moment saying, I'm wondering, having listened to me, if maybe you've got a little advice as to where I might turn. You'll have a better opportunity to get access to people when they are available, in a good mood. Not, of course, with no screaming loud parties with the DJ blaring and like on a New Year's Eve thing or whatever. But very often there may be the right moments. So even if you're an introvert like me, it might be wise to make yourself go to those parties. Don't just go right to the job pitch thing. Really try to connect with people with good eye contact, good listening, good sharing of some moderately personal things, listening to them, asking them questions, and then if it feels right, to make the ask of the modest ask is, again, not for a job, but do you have any advice as to where you think I might turn? Again, I'll give out the phone number. If you or someone you care about has a work-related problem of any sort, the phone number here, Work with Marty and Uncle Fur, Work Over, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I now want to talk a little bit about, I've been talking, because the show is still only in its second month of it, at its new time. It's been on the air on Sundays for 28 years. And one of the basic things I've done on the show during that time is try to mention under-the-radar careers, because everybody knows about the obvious ones. You know, I want to be an environmentalist, I want to be a doctor, lawyer, teacher, social worker, whatever. And so the competition tends to be greater in those above-the-radar fields. And so one of the things I try to do is give you, my dear listeners, an edge. And to that end, I try to talk about under-the-radar careers. But before I do that, I want to lay a little important prerequisite, which is this. The specific career that you choose, it's not crucial. There's no really right or wrong or best career or whatever. The real only factor that matters a lot in choosing a career is whether it uses your core ability, whether you are a word person or a people person or a STEM person. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math, or a hands-on person who likes to fix things or build things, or if you're an entrepreneurial type, self-employed. So as long as your career uses your core ability, again, words or people or STEM or hands-on or self-employment, there's dozens of careers within each of those bailiwicks that would be a good fit for you. And so people make the mistake of waiting for a specific career that is, like, forgive the pun, magical for them before choosing. And instead, time goes by more and more, and they are falling behind their peers. So that if you're 30 and you haven't yet started your career, the interviewer is going to invariably ask, well, what have you been doing this last decade? And certainly it's true of older people as well. But that is a backdrop, though. I want to talk about career. Many of the listeners to this show tend to be older, and so they're in a position not to choose their first career, but to make a career change. And so last week I talked about a few examples of the kinds of changes that people make that are more realistic than, for example, trying to go from being a social worker to being a rocket scientist. And last week I talked about being a government employee as a manager or an analyst or a coordinator. I talked about being a politician. I talked about being a political campaign manager. So I want to talk about a few more that have been successful routes to a career change. One is grant writer. Money is the lifeblood of nonprofits. And money is a key vehicle for getting money is to answer what are called requests for proposal. They come from government or they come from foundations. The grant writers write those proposals, and you get to then thereby live in the world of new ideas, new projects, and hope, because a new project, a new idea gives hope. Maybe this will make a difference for our target population. And it also requires a nice blend of writing and human interaction. And because money is nonprofit's lifeblood, it's one of those jobs in a nonprofit that's indispensable. They need grant writers. So that's a great career that many people from a variety of fields have transitioned into, as long as you are a good writer, an idea person, etc. Staying in the nonprofit sector for the moment, fundraiser. This is another example of bringing in money to the nonprofit sector. Again, it's the key to that money is still the lifeblood of every nonprofit. We tend to think that the lifeblood of the nonprofit is service to the underserved, but very often it's all about the money, which then enables greater services to be provided and hopefully not too much administrative overhead. In any case, what's beautiful about the fundraising job is that if you're good at it, the pay tends to be quite good, much better than most other nonprofit jobs. So, and this is maybe, a less obvious truth, you may or may not need to be the person who makes the ask, ask for the fat cat for the money. Nonprofits use other types of people who are, say, for example, very organized, who develop dossiers on prospective donors. They use the internet to develop detailed psychographic profiles of donors, and they give those profiles to the pitcher, the one who's going to make the ask of the nonprofit, the foundation, the donor, to help guide them into making the ask more successful. The people in the fundraising operation may plan fundraising events. There are many event planner types who plan the gala fundraisers, which I hate going to. My wife makes me go because she's a pillar of the community and we have to go. But I can't believe it, but they really do continue to get lots of people going and spending $200 a plate for, this dressing up in these fancy get-ups and having casino night or Roaring Twenties night or whatever. And these auctions, there are staff people who are event planner types who plan those events. And if you have non-profit sensibilities, it's a way for you to exercise those. Also, if you are more of a data person, there are databases that manage every donor and potential donor, which includes how much they've donated before, what are their psychographic, what are going to be their hot buttons, what's going to make them donate more. That's another kind of job. So there's fundraising jobs for everybody from writing types to write grants, from people who are good at developing trust and relationships with people and making the ask. There are jobs for event planning types, and there are jobs for data types. I'll give out the phone number again if you want to. If you've got a work-related problem, all this advice may be good in general for many people, but it may not be right for you. If you're looking for some advice as to what kind of career you should pursue, or if you're on the job and are frustrated in some way, either with the job, your coworkers, your boss, your supervisees, whatever kind of work problem you have, or you want to, I can play Shark Tank with you. If you've got a business idea that you want to run by me, I will ask you some hard questions and either give you the thumbs up or the thumbs down, tell you whether I would invest or not. So there's all kinds of reasons to call for a workover here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW. The phone number for all those reasons, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I've been talking about these careers that are good for career changes to transition to. I've tended to focus so far on more high-level jobs, but the truth is that many people have changed careers to becoming a personal assistant, whether it is working in a workplace or simply as a personal assistant for somebody at home. Many of my clients like being a right arm to a kind and respect-worthy person. So that is a career that you might consider, even if you're not degreed. Can be very rewarding if you are the personal assistant to the right person. Being a nurse, another good job for caretaking types. Being a registered nurse, which is kind of the default major nursing career. There are licensed vocational nurses, which are lower level, and they're nursing assistants. But being a registered nurse, it requires sometimes just 2 years of training after high school. But even just that 2 years of training offers myriad options. Those options could include everything from being an emergency department nurse in a hospital to working in a doctor's office to working as a med-surg, which is your basic hospital nurse, to being intensive care, neonatal, And then it can be a launch pad to things like nurse anesthetist, working alongside or often in place of, in many cases, the anesthesiologist. Being a nurse practitioner you end up doing 80 to 90% of what doctors do, what physicians do, with far less training, and yet you still make a six-figure income. I really think, of course, it's been said many times, but the aging boomers, make it such that the healthcare professions, especially what are called intermediate healthcare provider, not MDs, which are expensive, but nurse practitioners, which are less expensive, especially if we move to single payer, which I continue to believe that after the 2018 midterm elections, we're going to be moving towards single payer. There are going to be endless jobs for nurse practitioners and intermediate care providers like physical therapy assistants and physician assistants, because we're going to be trying to cover everybody, including many people who are low pay but high need, and therefore there will be more need for downscaled medical care to those intermediate care providers. So if you are okay around being around sick people and you are okay about being very detail-oriented, these intermediate healthcare provider jobs like nurse, which is the real door opener for many, may be a very wise career. If you're somebody who also likes to be a helper type but doesn't want to be dealing with sick people, certainly for the foreseeable future, there are going to be live teachers, not on video teachers, especially K-12. So being a teacher or a teacher's aide, if you're able to deliver lessons enjoyably, if you're able to get kids to want to behave for you, which is not an easy thing to do, some people seem to have the gift and others don't, and if you can inspire parents' confidence, that can be a very rewarding career, and it is one of the few careers, because it is unionized, that gets you basically lifetime job security after 2 or 3 years, with full benefits and lots of vacation and holidays. No, you don't finish your workday at 3 because you have papers to correct, in-service trainings to go to. But teaching, if you've got the gift, and it's not all trainable, you have to have that gift of getting kids to like you, because really, ultimately, the kids have the control. If the kids want to misbehave, they can. You can't control 30 misbehaving kids with screaming or threatening or low grades. It doesn't work. Some people seem to have the gift of getting kids to like them. And it's a way of the teachers who seem to be firm and yet caring and loving and are fascinating with their lessons. It's not an easy thing to do, but if you have that, teaching can be a very rewarding career. And another career that people change into very well, which is an analog. If you like the idea of teaching but not teaching children, indeed, being a trainer for a company or a nonprofit or government can be a great career. So give out the phone number one more time. If you or someone you care about has a work-related problem of any sort, I do what are called workovers here at KELW and work with Marty Nemko. The phone number here for that workover is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I want to end today's show with a little bit of a philosophical note. Most of us, whether we're working in a for-profit or non-profit sector, want to live a life in which we make a difference. And to that end, it helps to have a guiding principle, something we keep in mind as we make major life decisions in and out of work. And one such principle that I like is called utilitarianism. And maybe it's most easily explained by example. In choosing a career, a utilitarian-minded person would choose a career that uses their best abilities and skills to maximally benefit society. That differs from the person who chooses a career that's most lucrative or highest status, easiest to obtain, most fun or glamorous. And I really do believe that both when you put your pillow on your head on the pillow every night and when your life's done, the people who take that utilitarian perspective of using your best abilities and skills to maximally benefit society rather than focusing on money, you know, or status or what's easy to obtain or most fun or glamorous, ends up making a wise choice. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello. Hi.
Hey, good evening.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Hey. I'm calling. I'm happy with my career. My wife is happy with her career, but she's been thinking about a change.
Okay.
Locally, they've posted opportunities for dispatchers with the police department.
Mm-hmm.
Are you?
Yes, I'm listening very carefully. Of course, the 911 dispatchers, they're the ones who do who will dispatch an ambulance or a police car in the case of an emergency or fire department. Yeah.
Yeah, so she was really interested in that. I would imagine the hours could be demanding, and I was curious what would be similar to that, but not like a dispatcher position, something that's serving the public, but not necessarily with the police or fire department in the emergency situation.
Okay.
Well, there's any other options?
Of course there are. For example, there is something called emergency planning services, or emergency management services, that's what's called EMS, which you can Google, in which every city, county, and state, and again, our government tends to be interlocking and overlapping and in some ways labyrinthine, but they all have systems for planning on how to deal with emergencies, natural disasters and terrorist disasters. And there is a whole host of people, predominantly government employees, who are involved in helping prepare the public or prepare the infrastructure, prepare the fire department, the police department, the ambulances, etc., the hospitals, in case of emergencies. They do disaster drills and the like. So there's a whole infrastructure for those people. And, of course, after a disaster hits, like the most recent one here, has been the North Bay fires that attacked in Napa and Sonoma County. They're, of course, also part of the first response team. They're part of the communication team. So if, you know, and that may have more regular hours, because you're right, dispatchers, especially if they're starting out, they have great job security, but you're more likely to be starting out at the night shift or graveyard shift, because you've got to, obviously that has to be staffed 24 hours a day, whereas emergency management services, except in an emergency, are more likely to have regular hours. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
And that's a full-time thing that they're doing all the time, because I've never heard of, really thought about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also there are dispatchers that operate not just out of the police departments, but there are obviously dispatchers that go for... I remember when I was in college, I drove a taxi cab, and there was a dispatcher who told which cabbie goes out when and whatever. I imagine there are dispatchers. There certainly are dispatchers in any kind of transportation industry, in trucking,
for the
buses.
I think the angle that she was interested in was also the public service and just helping people, because that's similar to what she does now, but just with a little bit of a change.
I have to get off the air. What kind of skills or abilities or preferences does she have? What kind of help? There's everybody from helping from nurses to police officers. What kind of helping would she like to do and could do?
Working personally with people, multitasking, and she's good at data entry, so working with people and getting information to systems, and then really taking on like a personal approach to that.
Great. You know what? At that level, then people like receptionists at public agencies like Social Security or welfare offices or at hospitals are people who help people find the right resources. They're brokers, they're bridge builders. So that's, you know, I wanted to give you one more idea. That's one more thing she could do. It's amazing how helpful a good receptionist can be in those public service helping agencies. And that is all the time we have. So I want to thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate
it. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover. Plus, I thought I might lighten things up for the show between Christmas and New Year's. My wife, Barbara Nemko, and I are going to compete to see who can tell the best career and workplace jokes. Until then, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.